For Shirley with love, first, last, and always. Thus is his cheek the map of days outworn, when beauty lived and died as flowers do now, before these bastard signs of fair were born, or durst inhabit on a living brow, before the golden tresses of the dead, the rite of sepulchres, were shorn away, to live a second life on second head, ere beauty's dead fleece made another gay. In him those holy antique hours are seen, without all ornament, itself and true, making no summer of another's green, robbing no old to dress his beauty new. And him as for a map doth nature store, to show false art what beauty was of yore. William Shakespeare, Sonnet 68. Chapter 1. I'd like to remark at the outset that I'm a girl with better than an average brain. Just as some people are given the gift of a singular and often quite remarkable talent, such as Violet Cornish's uncanny ability to break wind to the tune of Joy to the World, I myself, in much the same way, have been blessed with the power of logical thinking. As Violet could easily confirm, it's something you're born with, and then improve by much practice. The many occasions upon which I had been consulted by the constabulary had sharpened my already considerable detection skills to the point where I had little choice but to turn professional. And so I had set up with Dogger, my late father's valet, gardener, and all-round sounding board, a small agency to which we gave the name, to signal respectability, Arthur W. Dogger and Associates. Little did we know that our very first case would be so close to home. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me begin at the beginning. My sister Ophelia's wedding was spoiled only slightly by someone calling out coarsely as the bride floated in modest beauty up the aisle of the ancient church, "Hubba hubba ding ding, 20 years in Sing Sing." The culprit was Carl Pendracker, one of Feely's former suitors. It was his Cincinnati accent that gave him away. We all of us pretended we hadn't heard, except my odious moon-faced cousin Undine, who let out one of her long, wet, horrible, slobbering snickers, such as might have been made by a herd of cannibal cows. More troubling, though, was when, just a few moments later, at the precise moment the vicar addressed the congregation, "If any man can show any just cause why they may not lawfully be joined together, let him now speak, or else hereafter forever hold his peace." One of the carved and painted angels, from its place high among the roof beams, cried out suddenly in the zany voice of a certain cinema cartoon character, I do, call the police." It was Undine, of course, who, bored by lack of attention, decided to practice her ventriloquism, which she had been studying for some time from a sixpenny book. Aside from that, except for the human remains, it was a beautiful occasion. Preparations had begun far in advance. First, there had been the cake. "The wedding cake must be laid down least 6 months before the nuptials," Mrs. Mullet had said, waving a batter-coated wooden spoon at me in the kitchen. "Else the marriage'll be poisoned." The mention of poison captured my undivided attention. "What kind of poison?" I asked. "The worst kind. The poison of leaving things to be done on the spur to the moment. Just look at that Lucy Havers as was, and then talk to me about daring the devil. Left it till the day before her wedding to have a cake baked at that bun shop in Inley, if you can credit it, and look what happened to her." I raised my eyebrows in a "what happened to her" signal. "Her husband, one of them Simmonses, he was,